And we're live.
Hello.
It might be a very short stint for me.
You just
discovered she might have to go to the restroom.
Everyone's here. Hi.
Okay, bye.
Katie went back. Way first in a boy.
Welcome to episode 114. I'm Andy.
I'm Jeremy.
Valiant,
Valiant 418 on the forums.
I'm Brian.
I'm Nathan.
Yay!
Hooray!
We did that.
It's actually better if you have your iPad.
It's very important.
Katie's lost the ability to go to the bathroom without an iPad. She no longer can do it.
She sits down
and she's like, nothing's coming out. I'm broken.
Interestingly detailed. But once the iPad comes, everything just comes out naturally.
Yeah, that's
Nature
true.
Nature takes its course the way God intended.
That's why you see animals in the wild holding iPads.
That's true.
Is it?
No, it's not. Animals are Kindle fans, actually, because they're more natural and higher evolved.
They got a bulk discount.
Yes. God just bought a shit ton of Kindles and threw them out there.
Oh, my gosh. We are live, right, Andy?
Yeah, we are.
Okay, just checking.
You just feel like slugging.
Oh, okay.
I work as the producer now on the podcast, okay. I want to make sure that shit is working before I really start participating in the conversations.
So...
Announcements.
I haven't been here in a while. Okay, announcements.
I need to do announcements first.
Okay.
The announcements are there was a lot of events this weekend and people want some stuff.
Oh, wait. That's true. I have an announcement that I forgot and I just remembered barely in time, but I'm going to forget it again if I don't say it now.
You're reminding me of an announcement. Thank you.
Yay, reminders. So, the wonderful people at... Andy got his new soundboard hooked up. Look at that sexy thing.
Sexy.
That is like twice as big, and it's all not frayed with wires sticking out of it.
I wondered if that was new, and I was like, nobody else is commenting on it.
It's got the slidey things like they use in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you want to make stuff, you just slide the slidey things.
I think he just muted you. You're live again.
I was muted? That makes me sad. But no, my announcement is that our good friends at Views on Minis have put the crippled systems/crippled aspects, whatever tokens up on their web store.
Oh, yes.
They had them at Adepticon, and people bought them, and people were happy, and I've been using them locally, and people are like, these things are way better than I thought they'd be, because it's easy to like live without. It's one of those things that you live without, but once you have them, you're like, oh, my God, how did I live without?
Yeah.
So you can now get them on the website.
I went 5 years without a reach marker, and now I would fucking stab someone if they tried to take it from me.
Yeah.
How do you go 5 years without a reach marker?
You measure 2 inches with your tape measure.
Oh my god!
The templates didn't exist in Mark One.
Wow!
Like the widget, the full like five and two and one that didn't exist.
My mind
dude.
Has been blown.
Yeah,
that was
little keys.
And I read a PG made that years ago, and that was used for a couple years, and then all the places took off with their own things.
Yeah, the 1-inch, 2-inch key that the spray templates that wasn't a thing.
Wow!
It was tape measures for everything, and then a spray template.
Yeah.
Huh.
You had to measure it like God intended. Announcement number two.
To justify us bugging them into making them.
Yeah, because we didn't bother them
if
a lot.
If you don't buy any, we look like assholes.
And it is nice when you're like, because with war room in today's world, sometimes you're like, I don't know what the fuck is going on with it. There's five heavies over there. I've done damage to four of them. And there's no cards being marked. It's all in his war. I'm sure the person's being honest about their war room damage.
But you don't know what the status is.
But it'd be nice to know if some systems are out. It's having like a system's being marked. And
it's also really nice for yourself. Like, I just switched back to playing Horde recently, and the crippled aspect markers, it's like, oh man, that reminds me I need to heal that beast to do anything.
Yep.
Like, other than you activate them, they do everything fully, and then you move on, and then you're like, oh... But that guy's spirit was out. It's like, how do you even begin to rewind that?
I use them religiously and not just because it's advertisement for getting them or anything. Like, I am so happy we got those made.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Jack ones are nice because you can forget things, but on beasts, it's huge because a lot of people just assume their beasts are always fully functional.
Yeah.
I mean, I do, but that's because I need to remember to activate my caster and heal them first.
Yeah.
Like, so yeah. But yeah, they're amazing.
So that was my announcement.
Good announcement.
We also have terrain or the zone markers coming to the Muse store eventually as well.
Eventually.
Yep. Crippled system zone markers that look pretty sexy.
They do look really cool.
Yeah, we'll have them probably, well, who knows how long before they get to the store, but we'll have them in the next month or so. Then they'll be
we'll have them. Very cool.
In the near future for
that is
maybe
exciting.
The first six pack, but for sure the second on. So announcement
your thing is barely moving, so you're probably quiet.
Am I quiet?
I don't know. Andy's in charge of that question.
Now you're a duck.
So, announcement number two. I mentioned this at the end of last podcast, but At the end of May, give or take a week, me, Nathan, and Jeremy are going to do a Dresden Files side podcast of the first five books. And then every month from there, we're going to do another...
Every month? So I have to read like a book and a book. I have to read 125% of a book every week?
Yes. I mean, to be fair, it does take almost a full day to read a Dresden book because you can't stop.
The best part about this is I'm going to produce that podcast, so I'm going to get spoiled of everything.
You've never read any of them, right?
I've never read any of them.
Read along with. No. So that's 25% of a book per work day.
Yes, yeah. If you read them at work.
Well, or just don't read them. Yeah, okay, all right.
Well, we've had a lot of people talk that have enjoyed it, and we've mentioned doing that in the past. So we're going to spend, you know, the summer every month, give or take. And obviously, the summer schedule can get kind of hectic, but...
I have audiobooks for, like, the first 10. I suppose I could listen to those at work.
Well, I mean, I'm going to read them at work. Why would I do work at work? What the fuck?
I don't know that I could get away with reading
them. I don't have that bullshit advantage that you guys have.
You're a manager now. Go to the back. I have some paperwork to do. Go back there. I'm going to...
Is that the noise that yours makes?
I just constantly make that noise. I just walk around the sales floor.
It's like you're leveling up in the bathroom.
Yeah. People are going to leave you alone.
Yeah. Yes.
And announcement number three, I've mentioned this before, and I'm afraid to mention it anymore because our attendance is out of control, which is good but scary. The six-pack starts in two weekends, May 16th, yep. 35 points, two lists, event number one of six. Insane prize support. We have 49 people signed up. I can handle in the 50s. Once we get, I mean, at some point, we're going to have tables that are like just, you know, like one tree.
Yeah.
After 40.
You're going to be asking Billy to bring their high-class terrain from first turn games.
Billy told me he can't make it, actually. Some other guys are coming down, but Billy will be here for the first one at least.
He just got what are you doing?
Is he sending his wife at least?
I wish.
Yeah,
well, they're also closing on a house next weekend
in Madison.
I thought he was closing. He closed at the event. Oh no, he just got a new job.
That's why he's working Saturdays. He can't come at all. But they're also closing on a house.
End result: Billy said your wife. Yes. She's friendly.
She can hang out with Katie.
Yeah,
Katie. I don't know if we've officially like gotten Katie to sign up, but we've told her she's doing this. That she's going to be one of the rules judges. For all the six pack events,
and everything she says is binding.
Yeah, she's binding. Right. You have a rules question, you go to Katie first.
Go to Katie.
So
do I have to take the microphones away from you?
I'm talking to
you. Ryan is having a problem with his microphone.
No, he
having a problem.
Just leave it.
So anyway, those are the three announcements.
Yes. Hooray!
Hooray announcements.
Announcements are done.
Yeah, I went to the bookstore after work and to see if I could buy... I went to Half Price Books to try to get the Dresden books, but they didn't have very many of them, so I have to buy them all on the Kindle now.
They're pretty cheap on the Kindle, at least.
They're like $7. I was hoping to get them for a couple bucks, but
they were on
I guess
sale.
I'm greedy.
The first like 10 were on sale for like $3 each, and Brian and I both snagged them.
It was
for like a week or a day or something.
A year and a half ago, before you had your Kindle, you should have gotten
on
sale.
You're going to come to all the six-pack events and rules judge, right?
I'm rules judging.
Yeah.
Brian's 10.
Yeah. It'll be amazing.
Hooray, we're back to the tradition of Katie being 3 feet away from a microphone
so nobody
can hear.
Well, it's just so far away. The table.
You could so literally.
Your chair
is movable.
You're movable.
That's also
I am. Is he?
You have the power to move me.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
So, topic number one.
Yes.
Should we go right into Avengers?
Yeah,
Spoiler alert.
If you haven't seen Avengers, I have no pity on you.
Let's clarify. If you fit into the Venn diagram of you listen to this podcast and you haven't seen Avengers yet,
and you give a shit about the Avengers enough to be angry about spoilers,
correct, then you're in a very small Venn diagram.
Yes.
I'm just going to come right out and say.
And as a side note to people in that diagram, Quicksilver dies.
You are a son of a bitch.
We said spoilers already.
We did say spoilers, technically, yes.
Is that who that is?
Yeah.
The guy
that
runs really fast is Quicksilver.
He's also the character who was in X-Men Days of Future Past.
Yeah, he was way cooler
but
then.
But in Days of Future Past, they're not allowed to mention the Avengers, and in the Avengers, they're not allowed to have him be a mutant, so that's why he was genetically modified.
Or mention Magneto.
Or call him Quicksilver.
So I do agree, because he's only in one scene in First Class, and First Class is a great movie, and he really...
Days of Future Past.
Days of Future Past. And he steals his scene really well.
Oh, really hard, yeah.
No, it's first...
He's in Days of Future Past.
He's in Days of Future Past, which is the one where Wolverine goes back.
But he did a really nice job.
He doesn't steal the whole movie, but the scenes he's in, he's the highlight of his scene.
He's so good in that scene, though. You're like, why did they just take him for the rest of the movie and just solve all their problems in like a minute? Like,
Avengers addresses that by having him get shot a whole bunch in his chest and heart and lungs, and then he doesn't solve any more problems.
And then no more problems solved.
It was a cool
On the other hand, Scarlet Witch has the power to do anything, it seems like, in the movie.
She has mind control and telekinesis.
And, like, ripping robots apart.
That's telekinesis.
I guess.
That's telekinesis.
Yeah, but, like, her telekinesis
is... telekinesis, though? Because...
moving things with your mind. She just disassembles them.
Not telepathy. Telepathy is mind reading.
Well, no, I understand that, but... I don't know.
She's moving one half of the robot that way with telekinesis, and she's moving the other half of the robot.
What about
that
the scene where she gets really angry and just everything in a city block just gets destroyed that's not a building?
Super telekinesis.
Yeah. It's her powers.
She's doing, it seems like it would take like an awful lot of training to master, and she's just like, yeah, no, I got this.
I mean, to be fair, this is untrained Scarlet Witch. In the comics, once she's trained, she literally just gets to warp all of reality if she feels like it. Like, there's a whole plot line where she just says, I don't want there to be any more mutants. So everybody loses all their superpowers.
So there aren't.
She just does that to everybody by saying, no more mutants.
Yeah.
Done.
She's kind of powerful.
Yeah.
So I think it's safe to say that we all enjoyed the movie.
Yes. As opposed to the internet, which seems to have many people that did not.
There are some people who don't like it. Some people just call it boring, which I don't quite get. I mean,
some people said the dialogue was bad. All right, the dialogue was good. I thought the dialogue might have been better than the first movie.
Well, the thing is, it's a superhero movie, and the only superhero movie where I feel like the dialogue was good is the X-Men ones, and not even all of the X-Men ones. Otherwise, it's just superhero movie dialogue, and that's fine.
What I will grant about this dialogue-wise, it is very, very, very quippy.
Yes.
It is a one-liner every 7.2 seconds.
And I'm okay with that.
I'm just saying, for some people, it's
But there were people that said it was badly written and there wasn't any humor. Like, how can you say that? How can you say that?
To me, it was on the edge of too much quip. I mean, there's definitely, like, the Expendables series, to me, go too far.
Yes. Yeah.
In this movie, I felt that it was near a line.
The ongoing thread of language throughout the whole movie killed me. It was amazing. From the very first, like, the very first scene where he says language, and then all the way through, like, right near the end of the movie, Nick Fury's like, so you gotta wash, you kiss your mother with that mouth. Like, that was amazing.
Yeah.
I can see where people may have felt like they're trying too hard to be funny.
Right.
Okay.
Right, and that's the thing. For some people, it was just...
I guess.
It felt to me more like a comic book movies are kind of quippy, though.
Yeah.
Comic book comics themselves are
quippy. Super quippy.
Well, that's my whole point. Yeah. Is for an action superhero movie, like, the dialogue was just fine. Like, it wasn't anything...
In the first Avengers, to me, is so amazing because it's the first time you really shove characters together, and you can't recreate that ever again.
No, and that's the thing. An origin story always has that going
like,
for
I still like the first Avengers more. I mean, it's not, to me, a top three movie of theirs, but to me, it's still a good movie of theirs that's very solid in their lineup.
The first Avengers has way too little James Spader.
Correct.
Like, there's a dearth of James Spader.
In that there's none.
Ultron.
There was even complaints that there wasn't enough Black Widow because Hawkeye got his stuff, but she's been in more movies with more stuff going on.
Yeah, she's been in like four of their movies.
And she had a big plot in Winter Soldier.
Yeah. So her, and I thought Hawkeye stuff was great. I mean,
Hawkeye stuff, I really like, because we all agreed after the first one that the real problem was, why do you give a shit about Hawkeye and why is he here? No one cares.
Flip side, he like single-handedly took down the fucking helicarrier in the first one.
He did.
Like it's easy to forget about.
As a
like,
bad guy.
Once he's an Avenger, it's like, here's a dude with a bow. But when he was a bad guy, he beat the shit out of them.
Yes.
And so, but it's dismissed, but... They had a lot more Hawkeye in this movie. It was definitely a Hawkeye apology movie.
Well,
the only thing I didn't like about the Black Widow thing was her and the Hulk getting it on, because I was very confused about the relationship. It's like, at some points it seemed like they didn't know if they liked each other, and then at some points they're like, we're already getting it on, and it's totally clear.
I don't think they were ever getting it on. I think it was just clear that they both wanted to.
I don't know. I just felt like it was going, like, it wasn't a very...
Katie commented on that immediately after the movie, that from her perspective, the whole Hulk and Black Widow thing felt contrived.
It wasn't, why wouldn't you go after Captain America? Because he's more dreamy. Was that your first complaint?
And they work together, like, a lot, and...
Also, it's,
usually people who work together a lot do get it on, because they spend so much time together.
Right.
Maybe this is a hair-splitting thing, although I would say the characters would agree with me. The Hulk and her don't have much of an interest in each other. It's Banner and her.
It's Banner and her, yes. Yeah. The Hulk,
I've seen less so. Movies about the other thing.
Oh, Nathan.
Thoughts, Andy?
His thoughts are the soundboard.
All right. Trying to bring him in there, but he seems to...
Well, he's got the new soundboard, so he's fiddling.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. Things are getting unplugged.
Something got unplugged.
Whenever he unplugs things, we don't know what's happening.
We'll just keep talking and assume someone's listening to us or seeing it. We don't know. We were just talking to ourselves.
Other thoughts about the movie?
James Spader was amazing.
James Spader was amazing.
I want him to just narrate my life. I want to be walking places and just name James Spader to describe what I'm doing. It'd be so much more exciting. Like, everything.
I thought they did a really good job with, what's the name of the Mind Stone creation thing?
Vision.
They did a really good job with Vision, I thought.
This was a pretty high-level character to kind of bring him in. It's kind of difficult in some ways.
Yeah, it's a little bit very... It lends itself to Deus Ex Machina really hard.
I don't care a ton about Vision, but I thought they did well with him.
Ultron was a lot more interesting than I thought he was going to be. I thought he was going to be like HAL 9000. Like, very unemotional, very cold, very calculating, whatever.
He was not.
The first time he's talking and he forgets the word children and he's very, like, natural and telling anecdotes, I'm like, oh, he's just like he's a dude.
Yeah, like, he's just a guy.
It's just a guy that happens to exist on the internet and be a 9-foot-tall guy.
And is fantastic when he sings Pinocchio.
I don't understand, if he exists on the internet, why killing the last robot would...
Because Vision stopped him. Vision, when they first grappled and they like zoomed in on his brain and it was turning from blue to yellow or whatever, that was Vision erasing the internet escape route and trapping him in his bodies.
Oh.
Yes. They did actually say that in the movie. Like, they literally said that.
They said a lot of things.
They said a lot of things, but they did say that.
There was a shitload of technobabble, because when you invent Ultron the way he is as a villain, and you have to do 30 steps to stop him from just not being dead, you have to just say them all during fight scenes really quickly.
There's just things going on.
They do a good job of, like, the subtle, like, people using the powers together, like when, you know, Captain or Thor has Captain America's hammer, and they do all these little
things. Yeah, the little reverberation off there.
Although, James from Pegasus, that infuriates him, because he vibranium, the whole thing with it is that it absorbs all impact, so it couldn't possibly ricochet off of Thor's hammer because there's no blah 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 blah. It's like, he ricochets it off of people's faces all the fucking time. Like, it's cool, shut up.
And they, even though the first scene was hilarious and everyone tried to lift a hammer, they pulled that into the movie with Vision being able to just, you know,
which was amazing. He's just like,
with Vision just holds it
here.
That's such a good way of establishing him being actually trustworthy.
Yes, it was.
And although he's not human, so maybe the hammer doesn't work on him.
True.
You know, because like,
cause like an elevator.
An elevator can lift it.
I'm sorry, the dialogue was amazing. I loved the dialogue. Anyway, great movie. Andy's throwing me off all the things that are going on here. But
we hope
things are going well.
The only thing I didn't understand about the internet raging is like, it's bad against women, and I didn't understand that at all.
Well, I don't think it's the movie as much as the before the movie, when the guy who plays Hawkeye shoved his foot so deep in his mouth that he could walk with his foot out of his ass. But,
and I didn't share that with Katie, and she may not have seen that.
And I don't even think that was that bad.
Because in the first movie, Hawkeye and Black Widow obviously had a friend thing. They were very close, which close could mean close.
Could mean close.
And then in Winter Soldier, her and Captain America kissed a bit and flirted a bit. So before this movie, they were being interviewed, those two actors. And the interviewee was like, oh, well, and here in this movie, Black Widow's, like, flirting on Banner. What's that about? And they're like, she's just a slutty whore.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair.
Which is not something you say in an interview.
Well, but they could have just been joking around with each other.
They were joking. And the thing is, like, Hawkeye.
They were just
I would have made that joke.
Right. Especially, like, in character. Like, if Hawkeye had a thing for Black Widow, and the Black Widow was like, she's a slutty whore.
Right.
You know? And if you've been interviewed it was like after 9 hours of being interviewed, just random questions, they just, you know, and they've been joking with people all day, so they just made a random joke, and people are like, oh my God.
But the internet exploded.
The internet did explode.
Because people have to get outraged by everything. I mean, you know what?
That is true.
It's okay to call her a whore.
I do think it fails the Bechdel test, though.
Which is?
For what that matters.
Yeah. She never talked about anything but men.
Two women talk to each other about anything that isn't a man. It almost happens because Black Widow and Hawkeye's wife talk about Hawkeye's wife's pregnancy.
Right.
But she's having a boy, and that's the only topic of they're like, oh, how's little Natalia? It's actually Nathaniel. It's a guy. And I think that's the only girl-on-girl conversation.
Because she never really talks to the Red Witch.
Scarlet Witch, no.
Well, with very few characters. I mean, it's like opportunities.
The Bechdel test is not always a sign of being misogynistic or feministic, but it is always an interesting note.
I mean, not that, but I sometimes people are like, well, they'll mention that test. I'm just like, okay, now I think you're a douchebag.
Right. It just was topical. Yeah, that's the only mention.
And not to drag Joss Whedon into it again, but something that Joss Whedon has gotten crap for repeatedly is they're like, why do you write such strong women? Yeah, like that's something he legitimately gets in trouble for regularly. So like,
or he gets mad when people ask him like, why?
And,
why
wouldn't I? Women are strong. Like, yeah. Black Widow's a kick-ass character in the show. Hawkeye's wife is like holding down the fort and like a legitimately cool character. Mariah Hill, even though she doesn't get a lot of screen time, is a really cool character, and she's more fleshed out in like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff. But
she looks much better with longer hair. When she goes back to short hair, it annoys me. Although she did that in the movie too. It's like, I have long hair.
And it's very topical.
I just, you know,
I like women with short hair.
I think the Red Witch is a really, really strong character.
Still Scarlet Witch.
Scarlet Witch.
I don't care. Where is now.
Scarlet's kind of reddish.
Scarlet is a subsection of
but
red.
But she is a really cool character. Yes, yeah. 100%. But she doesn't interact with the other women.
Like when she, like if her and Quicksilver are off, and Quicksilver is lamenting about, oh, my parents are dead, and if all she said was, man, I wish I had a boyfriend, then I could see some problems.
Yeah, that would be
but
different.
She wasn't like, man, I'm so lonely, no dude will fuck me.
Yeah, she's like, I want to kill Stark because of a bomb.
I don't think the film was misogynistic at all.
For what it's worth, a dude might have been fucking her, because their characters are based on the Ultimates series of Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, so. There's a certain... They're very Targaryen.
No, not
Targaryen. Targaryen.
Yeah, Targaryen.
Targaryen and slash everything.
They never overheard.
She was talking in an interview about how her and the guy who plays Quicksilver talked about that, because they both got the parts. They both bought every issue of the Ultimate series to read on their characters, and then they're like, well, we can't just be fucking each other on screen. So in the movie, they're always like holding hands. Yep. They're very touchy-feely with each other, and so they're like... For those of you who've read the Ultimate series, you get to be like, are they or aren't they?
Right.
Yeah. They could just be close brother and sister, that too. They could just be close brother and sister.
They could just be close brother and sister. That's why it's not overt. Yeah. Because a lot of people hate that about the Ultimate series.
We'll never know.
Editions.
The world may never know.
I even like the Quicksilver. Well, here, so I mentioned this, how I think most people, but at the end of the movie, I love that when the climactic scene is happy in the last 20 minutes, that the Avengers spend at least 10, half the time they're like fighting Ultron, and the other half the time they're actually trying to save people's lives. They're like,
yes.
Let's not fight here. There's people. Get them on, you know, get them off the island and all this kind of stuff. And just like Superman, when at the end of Superman, he saves all of Metropolis while fighting
the
bad guys.
He saves 70 to 80% of Metropolis.
Nope. By killing them,
like,
he saves them from living.
A ton of people on the explosion on the island. Like, it may have been smaller pieces, but it was still like apparently, like,
but they did try to evacuate everyone far away from the city.
Yeah, I mean,
I know, but there's like...
People probably still died.
People probably still died.
They spent a lot of effort to minimize it. Where like Superman, everyone just dies. He makes no real effort to save
anyone's
lives.
He saves four people.
Yeah, he saves four people. At least 100,000 people are dead.
Yeah.
And there's like
four fewer.
Yeah.
Yes. It was the ones that he could see right then and there.
And to be fair, the Avengers, like at least when in Winter Soldier and stuff, they talk about how in the first Avengers, like their big regret was that the fight in New York, they killed lots of people themselves. Like, they regretted that. It's something that they were conflicted about.
Well, and Stark had one line where he was like, is the Stark rescue mission, like, going to the city that...
Yeah, to the city where him and the Hulk fought. And, like, it was a big deal. Like, they tried to make it a thing. And it was something that was called out... You guys have all watched the Daredevil miniseries, yes?
No, I have not seen all of them yet. But
okay, Daredevil miniseries, mild spoiler. They talk about, in that miniseries, about how...
The repercussions of that battle.
Yeah. How it's affected that. I mean, The reason why I think Marvel works over DC is that they kind of base Marvel in reality.
Mm-hmm.
At least it feels like reality, as in DC, where, you know, it just... It doesn't.
It doesn't feel like it.
It doesn't. I mean, there's... I mean, if somebody came to New York and destroyed it in a fight with some other person, that person would be absolutely vilified.
Yeah.
Even not even remotely looked upon as a savior.
Right.
He would be vilified because he... killed
all those people,
100,000 people, or
it
more.
It's like if Osama bin Laden was in New York, so we just nuked the city. Like, we got the villain.
Yep.
Like, yeah, you kind of just killed everyone.
Way to be a villain.
Yeah, but like, I don't know. The people still seem to be pretty nonchalant about death. Like, everyone just kind of goes about their business as normal. Like,
I saw a funny thing that the timeline of like the whole Marvel Avengers universe, like, it's so short. Like, four of the movies take place in a week, and like all of them have apocalyptic extinction level events happening, and people are like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm just gonna deal. Well, if you're not a superhero, there's nothing you can do about it, so meh.
Yeah, it's meh. Well, you can like hate
move.
The, yeah, why like, move or whatever.
Everyone moves a cave. Safer.
Anything else anybody want to talk about with the movie?
is mostly good.
I missed all the conversation for it too because I was messing around with audio. But
I am a little bit sad that because you said that they're only going to have the Avengers that they mentioned at the very last.
Yes, then the next movie will only have them.
And so that's a little bit sad, but I understand why they're doing it.
Because they're the crappy ones.
Well, there's two Avengers. There's a couple of them are cool. There's two Avengers. The first one has, when the movie ends, the second one's going to be just those characters. And part two will bring everybody together.
Bring
everyone back in.
Yeah, it'll be like the super team.
Because Hulk is MIA for his reasons. Yep. Thor has to deal with the Ragnarok movie that's happening.
Yep.
And Stark is going to have Stark
and Captain America are both going to be dealing with the Civil War thing.
But Stark will be out of it.
Cap and Iron Man are going to have issues. Slight issues. Maybe something, a war of a civil type.
That's one of my favorite memes is all the people, like all the things that they're, you don't even realize what they are going at first because they're just little like screenshots with text from the Avengers movies and then like Iron Man drinks Captain America's coffee or whatever and so then the last one is just the title card for Civil War. So it's just like a whole bunch of reasons causing it.
That's actually pretty good.
And they did a good job at why there won't be a Hulk in there. Because, I mean, when you're having a Civil War, why would some of these characters not be there? And Thor's obviously off doing his own shit now. So they did a good job, like, okay, you're not going to see everyone because...
Hulk could have been on his own planet.
Yeah.
It's also could be a money-saving venture, too, because, you know, they have to pay Downey Jr. so much money just to be on the thing. And we'll have Iron Man without Iron Man.
Yeah.
Which is, you know...
I will say the one thing that they downplayed in the movie, and I don't mind because he's by far my least favorite character in the entire movie... series is Thor. He gets downplayed a lot in this movie. Like, other than his weird vision quest.
Why do you hate Thor so much?
I just don't like... I hated the first Thor movie.
Oh, but he's so good.
And...
The first movie wasn't fantastic. It wasn't terrible.
I hated it.
Yeah, I agree with Katie. It was...
Jeremy doesn't like hammers.
Okay. I don't have a problem with hammers. I just didn't like the first Thor movie. The second Thor movie was better.
Somebody posted something. I didn't really appreciate Thor until I saw this thing. And I'm like, you know what? That's right. And I kind of love Thor now. Because he's such a happy, fun guy. Like, in the midst of this, like, they had the thing with the diner when they first take him to eat and Thor won. Yeah. And... the girl's like, oh, this is totally going on Facebook. Smile and takes a picture. And he just smiles or whatever. And they're like, think about that. He has no clue what the fuck is going on. He's been hit by a car. He's been tased like twice. He's been drugged. He's been dethroned. He's in some alternate dimension. But someone told him to smile and he's having fun. So he smiled. Like, that's Thor.
I mean, he's a happy-go-lucky guy. I just don't like Thor.
And he's just like in the second movie when they have the big challenger and he just kills him in like one shot. And he's like, we done here. Come on now. Thor's great.
That's... I like Thor. I think that he's a lot like... Well, never mind. I'm going to take that back. Just stick that back in there.
It's, okay. It's a rare moment where she realizes she's gone down a terrible path.
All right, then.
He has the Superman element, sadly. He does. But I think he's a little bit more human than Superman is.
He's got the power, which is good, but he's just so fun.
Doesn't have like every single power like Superman does.
And at least in this movie, he doesn't do much. Like he had a big role in Avengers, and I enjoyed him in Avengers. But in this movie, other than the Vision Quest, like you could have just not.
They downplayed Captain America. Like a lot of them, Captain America and Thor, I think, took backseat to a lot of the other ones. Because Black Widow and Hulk was a big plot thing. Iron Man was obviously a big plot thing. And, well, confusing or not, it was a big thing. So Captain America, Black Widow and Hulk was a big thing. Iron Man was obviously a big thing. Sure. Well, Stark specifically was a big thing. And then Hawkeye was almost the main character. Like, he was almost above even Stark because he interacts with the twins the most. Mm-hmm. And he's got the whole, you know, why do we need Hawkeye thing.
Yeah. Did you know that was...
We're fighting an army of robots and I have a bow and arrow. None of this makes sense.
On a floating island or whatever.
On a floating island.
Did you know that Quicksilver's first and last line?
I was going to bring it up, but go ahead.
That was his first and last line was. I bet you didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
Or something like that. It was
his first line and his last line in the movie are both to Hawkeye when he says, "I bet you didn't see that coming."
Okay. Nice.
Just a little bookending symmetry.
Even though Quicksilver wasn't as cool as the other movie because they had to do a whole movie versus that.
Yeah.
And I thought his interaction with Hawkeye was great, and I thought that they just did his character.
Yeah. I was.
Well, he was a different character in this movie because he was much more serious. Like, he had more of a tragedy thing where the other guy was just like a little rebel punk that like could do whatever.
Who had headphones in the 60s.
Yeah.
Well, he ran so fast he got headphones from the future.
Yeah.
It works in the Flash.
Yeah.
It does work in the Flash.
When the Flash, he goes backwards in time, though.
Well, if you go back enough, you loop around. That's what Einstein
you
said.
Have to get away from the bees.
Yes. You can't get away from the bees quick enough.
Ah, bees.
We're talking about Quicksilver. It's going to devolve into the Flash.
The Flash a little bit. That's fair.
Wait, that shapeshifter that was just in front of me turned into my friend while I was watching. Maybe it's my friend?
Maybe it's
God, the Flash.
Maybe it's Maybelline.
Yes. Is there like a miniseries of the Flash?
Yeah. The Flash has a show that was a spinoff from Arrow.
Yeah.
Okay. Katie's watched Arrow, but she's never watched The Flash. You would actually
so
really
fast,
like
he
The Flash.
Can go back
the
in Flash. Time is oft times punched by normal people, and his
frequently.
Main arch nemesis is a guy with a flamethrower, or no, a guy with a fire extinguisher.
A fire extinguisher, basically. Yeah.
It's a great show.
It's just a normal dude with a cold gun, and the Flash is like helpless against this mighty villain.
The show, it's like certain.
The show is great though, but
you would love the Flash.
You would.
Everything about the Flash would appeal to you.
You can't watch it and analyze like you could Breaking Bad because it falls apart upon analysis.
Yeah. He's faster than bullets, and like random humans are punching him in
the
face.
The shit out of him.
Frequently beat the shit out of him.
Yes.
Not as much now, but yes. Well, to be fair, sometimes he just had a lot of pizza. He was slower.
If all he did was carry handcuffs in a burlap sack and just run up to people and put both of them on them, he would win every fight before anything happened.
I loved the car chase scene. I don't remember what episode it was, but
it
they
was
were
a
in a car
one.
Yeah, they were in a car chase scene, and he just like goes up there, grabs the guy, puts him back into the back of the squad. Yeah.
That's a problem.
And then they're like, we're out of room, and he's like, okay, and he goes and takes the driver and switches him out for a cop. The cop driving their car.
That's the problem with Quicksilver the Flash show. Super speed seems to be like the best ability because you have to like sometimes forget it how good it is to.
I will argue.
Like I said on Facebook because I always rant about the Flash, and I said the way you get around that. Sorry. Is you put them in a situation where their power isn't the answer.
Right.
Like, the Flash is fast enough that he can run away from you if he needs to, so put him in a place where he can't run away. Like, trap him in an enclosed space and fill it.
An office building with bees. He can't get out.
Yeah, he can't. How do you get out of a normal office building that has bees in it?
Cisco said left and not right.
You can also get a fire extinguisher, and that really seems...
It fucks him over.
It's really a problem for him.
Or flip side, you know, make it so that he's not the one in danger.
So there's a hostage.
Do the Dark Knight thing, where you have Harvey Dent at one location, and Rachel Dawes at the other, and he's not fast enough
except
to go to both.
Except he is fast enough to get them both. Like, that's the problem with the Flash. There are two powers that I feel like just are ultimate powers you can't get around.
You just punch him, because he can't dodge punches if you're a normal person.
Right. Is one of them telekinesis?
Not telekinesis, but telepathy. Yeah. Like, the problem with telepathy as a superpower is, unless there is something exists in the universe that blocks telepathy,
Magneto's
helmet, you just always win if you're a strong enough telepath. Or you
and
should.
Amoral enough.
Oh, yes, and yes. Amoral enough. But if you're a strong enough telepath, you should just win every fight. Like, literally, strong enough telepathy might be the only power that stops super speed, because you just telepathize them from far enough away.
And handcuffs you before you see him.
Right, but
you
have to know
anything going on in your head. Like, if you're just running really fast and you're just like making decisions as you come up.
But
upon
I just be like, hey, Katie's head, you're stopping now. Like, that's the problem with telepathy.
It depends on if the telepathy you can insert versus just read. If it's mind control,
but most,
any distance, yes.
In both the Marvel and DC universe, telepathy generally lets you control people's minds.
I think that the answer to telepathy, though, is to make it so that they have a hard time concentrating on one individual person.
Or like, wear a really stupid helmet.
Yeah. Like, think about Fry from Futurama when he becomes telepathic. No, this is good.
Okay,
like,
let's hear it.
He just gets, like, bombarded with, like, everyone's thoughts and goes crazy because, like, he can't. Can't cipher out between the ones.
Right,
it happened in Angel too,
and Superman.
So I think that's the answer to making telepathy like not
is have
as
enough
strong.
People go after them.
Well, no, it's just you have to make it so that it is like a lot of concentration or to focus on one person.
But a trained telepath, once they put the filter up,
is like it seems too easy to be trained. Like when you see like even in the origin ones, they're just like all of a sudden magically are just able to do whatever their power needs them to.
Yeah,
be
Xavier. Good. Xavier is pretty kick ass even as a kid.
And that's what I mean. To Kate's point, she's agreeing with me. What I was saying, I mean, it's the obvious thing. If you give somebody a super huge power, you need to mitigate it either with a built in weakness like the lack. Of a filter in telepathy, or with situational weakness like being stuck in an office building with bees.
And then, like, okay, so, and then if like you're sleeping, is the filter still up? Because, like, think about Harry Potter, and he wasn't able to control Voldemort getting into his own head, especially when
he's
asleep.
So another telepath can beat a telepath. It still makes it the ultimate power.
Well, no, but my point is when you're sleeping and you don't have, like, do you have your filter up when you're sleeping, or do you just, like, gradually
I would just mind control 1,000 people to protect 1,000 superheroes to protect me, though.
No, but not like but what not her point is while you're sleeping and your filter's down, if someone's getting beaten to death to the next block over, sure. Do you feel you their aware? Pain and terror and it fucks
no.
with
yeah,
you?
Yeah, you would no. like
because I'm wearing a tinfoil hat.
Wearing a tinfoil hat. Yeah.
But like, it just seems like they would all just like
it seems
slowly
like,
go crazy. Yeah. Like,
it seems like Jean, a telepath would just be crazy.
Whatever.
I mean,
Jean Grey. Like her going crazy should be the ultimate death of every single telepath.
If it has been a couple times.
Yeah. I agree, but the problem is in the Marvel and DC universe, as they say, you can just become a good enough telepath and then you're fine, and then it's the ultimate power. That, like, Xavier never even, like, has nightmares. He's just fine. He's cool. Don't worry about it.
Well, there you go.
And, like, literally, he has the same problem as Superman. The only thing that stops Xavier from ruling the planet...
Stairs.
Is
I was like, oh, my God. I know the answer.
Is Xavier.
Xavier leading an army of Ed 209s. And they yeah. just come to a staircase. And
they're just
sad.
Done.
Clap, trap, like, no. I love that in the closing credits of the pre-sequel, they address that plot point. I don't know if
do they really?
To
I don't remember that.
Yeah, because he can't climb stairs in Borderlands 2, but in the pre-sequel, as a playable character, you can go up and down stairs as him. So during the closing credits, Jack finds him and beat you, like when he destroys all the clap traps, Hammerlock rebuilds this specific one, but he can't find a good tire, so he puts a shitty small tire on him, and that tire can't handle stairs. They actually put that plot point in there to close that loophole.
Nice.
Anywho.
So the Flash sucks is basically what
no, I really Flash like the Flash.
Amazing.
Fuck you.
The Flash is amazing. He just is terrible at using his powers.
The other thing you could always do to somebody who's super fast is shut off the lights.
Apparently.
Because, you know, if they're going full speed and they can't see.
They can't just go get a flashlight?
Well, they'd have to know where one is, and they can't see anything. Can't but then yeah. you can't see anything.
If you can blind them, that would be amazing.
I think they can feel for the door at super speed.
At super speed,
also.
Yeah. Like,
you know, no. like, he doesn't run around with his hands behind his back, just there face first constantly.
Although sometimes I think he does do that.
I do. Too.
The other thing that I was wondering about with Quicksilver is, like, he was hitting, like, the robots and stuff super hard at a super fast speed, and I was like, wouldn't that break his hand?
Yeah.
The theory behind a lot of martial arts, and this is actually a thing, is, like, the guys that, like, break bricks and wood with their fists, if you hit something fast enough and at the right angle, you're fine.
The angle's doing
the
it.
Angles
the
angles are what is important. The question is, how did he become enough of a martial artist to know those angles?
Yeah, well, but he's still hitting metal.
Well, right. And also, it's usually people, when they have superpower, they usually have more than just speed. It's speed and some kind of power. I mean, because you are right, if he punched something, why isn't his hand
like shoot? Speed and super healing.
Goggles. Otherwise, he'd get all this debris and stuff in his hand. Like, think about what happens to dogs when they stick their heads out the windows.
Yeah, the fact that he didn't have to cover his eyes was kind of impressive, because even in the other one, in the X-Men one, like, he put on goggles when he was going to run really fast.
But that was, that's different than the normal Quicksilver. Quicksilver never really
he never really
goggles.
Did that, but like
no,
they, also, they tried to address it.
The first time Ant-Man shrinks down, he should just suffocate and die
because of air.
Yeah, because the thickness of the air at that size is different, so his lungs wouldn't work, so he would just die. And then when he regrew,
but he has super strong lungs.
The matter creation would cause atomic explosions
well,
because of the
too.
Amount of energy required.
And yes, that is also true.
So the problem is you just have to not care.
I don't understand the concept of Ant-Man.
He's a guy.
He goes small.
That's this big. No, I understand the concept.
The issue is,
I just don't understand why it's good.
Because he can go small, which is handy for getting places, but also because blah, technobabble, when he shrinks down to 1/100th of human size, he gets 100 times stronger than people. So he can punch you like a freight train when he's that small. Don't ask it to make sense. They said that's what happens, so it happens.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
They just literally say he gets small, he gets stronger, because stuff.
Because yeah. science.
Because it's Paul Rudd.
Okay.
Also that.
Well, he is Paul
Katie
Rudd.
Katie is very excited about the Paul Rudd movie.
Yeah. I'm very torn because I don't understand the concept of Ant-Man.
I just told you.
Paul Rudd.
Okay.
My mind is still rejecting.
In your mind, this will blow
your mind.
He's the guy from Clueless the whole time.
He is the guy from Clueless.
So this might blow your mind. So the person that actually created Ultron originally was the old man in Ant-Man. That's the guy who originally created Ultron
in the comics.
Ant-Man
did it. You think I'm more committed to these movies than I am?
Maybe.
Is the podcast over? Have we blown our time on this?
I think we're ready for another topic, but I think we only have time for one.
So Avengers, we liked it. Go see it. Because if you go see it again.
Go see it again.
We've all words.
Go see it again.
I failed.
You did. Your words are bad today.
Are we done spoiling Avengers so I can take down the banner?
Yes, you can take down the spoil. Well, I won't promise we don't say something later, but probably. Okay.
I really just wanted to shout a giant spoiler there. So much.
Snape killed Dumbledore.
What? I didn't believe that when I read the book.
Really?
I was
thought
certain,
it was a joke?
No. When I read the book, oh, okay. I read it happening, and I was certain that it had not actually happened.
Because how it happened.
Because yeah. Every previous use of the Avacadabra curse specifically, blatantly says that they slump over. They're just done.
Yeah.
They slump. And so he doesn't behave the way he does. He's blasted off of it.
Yeah.
That curse doesn't blast you anywhere. Not you slump. No. And it's a huge thing in that book that Snape doesn't have to say what he's doing out loud. He's very skilled. He can just think things. So he could possibly just say nacho cheese while doing something because he doesn't have to say it. So what he says and what he does are not linked.
And so you thought it was
very, very, very set up that it was faked.
And then they had the Phoenix thing and like the Phoenix cry was supposed to be able to like
there's all
people.
Sorts of things.
Yeah. There's a lot
really
of shit there.
Weird.
I was very the next book would have said, nope, totally dead. I'm like, did you not read your own books? None of this makes sense.
I think that she left it open and then made a decision.
And then when she
after.
Wrote the new book, she made the decision he had to be dead.
Yeah.
Possible. As long as we all agree that Neville Longbottom's the best because he kills Voldemort.
Neville
Longbottom
also
is pretty
very
impressive.
Attractive. Oh, really? Raylene just watched all the movies again, and so she's watching the other one. She's like, oh my god, he really. Good for him, puberty was kind. Because, like, 10-year-old Neville is one of the ugliest children you've ever seen. And then 18-year-old, whatever the actor's name is, just is like this hottie. It's
yeah,
like, good job, you.
Well, I thought I had read somewhere that they gave him, like, fake teeth and, like, a fat suit and, like, made him unfortunate looking.
I don't know. That
I don't
know.
Even
that,
with the, even if there are fake buck teeth, the rest of him was not an attractive child.
But as an adult, I'll just look up a picture.
All right, then.
Which is hilarious because we're watching the movies and I'm like IMDb-ing to double check when Emma Watson was 18.
Right.
And Raylene's judging me and I'm like, fuck you. Yeah. You have the biggest girl boner for Daniel Radcliffe ever.
Ever. Yeah. A lot of girls did, as it turned out.
Yeah. Like, she was like, oh, Equus, a play. He's naked in it. Can we get tickets?
Yeah.
Yeah, woman. Good looking man. See, look at that.
I'm aware what he looks like. Thank you.
You got Neville
Are
pictures?
You sure?
She does have a Neville picture.
Yeah, I do.
Where were we?
Might put that
I'm not even gay.
Well,
topic. Something else, anything else.
That turn.
So, we have time for. It's going to be an odd transition, but I'm just going to go with it anyway. I was watching a Cracked video the other day about like sex things and like that are unfortunate that they exist. And one of them was a vagina wall. I don't know if you saw this video or not.
I have not yet.
But one of the vaginas looked like they just like exploded everywhere. They're like tentacles coming out
oh,
of
wait,
it.
Oh, wait, the vagina wall.
The vagina wall.
Yes, yeah.
The plaster
because
vagina
there was
wall.
The wall of
dicks.
Of
dicks.
Robotic dicks.
Robotic dicks. And it's just like, well, where on earth are they going to find something, you know, and then there's the vagina wall.
The wall,
like, well, okay,
the wall of plaster vaginas.
But, because art.
Because art.
But, like, one of the vaginas just looks like a very unfortunate event happened, and that woman, like, she just...
Like, the unfortunate event was Hiroshima occurring inside of her vagina.
Okay.
Like, it was bad.
It was bad.
This poor woman.
I know. Well, there's, like, normal,
this is not
normal,
a scheduled
normal,
topic.
Explosion. Normal, normal.
I don't mean this poor woman because that's her vagina. I mean this poor woman... Well, I mean, kind
yeah,
of.
I mean, kind of.
It's kind of like somebody with an unfortunate-looking penis.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh...
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's, well, I'm sorry it's that okay, people on Nathan. The internet are talking about your penis and making fun of
it. Well, the funny
it.
Thing is the article, the video doesn't at all mention this one particular thing being unusual.
Right.
But you're, like, watching the video and you're like, yeah, those are all... Oh, my God!
It's true.
It's dramatic.
I guess vaginas must be a lot more,
taboo.
Very, well,
very
taboo also
very taboo.
In Japan,
they're
it's,
very a lot. Like
yeah.
A penis is just longer or shorter. It might be a little different ratio.
Sure.
Maybe there's a mole over here. Who knows? But in 20. General, it's penis shaped. Yeah, you know. But
it's penis shaped.
The labia is the thing. Like
yeah.
the labia. There's just so many
variety.
Such
there's,
a variety.
You should look at the penis wall, the vagina wall. Like there's like all the kinds of vaginas you could ever have, including an exploded one.
Right, which was probably the point of the artwork was this woman. You know.
Well, it was just kind of
off.
In the middle of the wall. Like, oh,
well,
the
no,
one,
the,
yeah, that
the
there
whole,
are different kinds.
It wasn't
kinds.
That one, but
yeah.
It wasn't like she saw this one vagina.
She's like, man.
And
said,
like, must build a wall so that this one can be there.
Well, it's like, I don't even know that it would have stood up out as much if it wasn't surrounded by normal vaginas.
You saying that some people may have thought that that was normal?
No.
I'm just hurt that you're calling her vagina abnormal.
Judging by the other 99 in that shot.
Oh.
All right. Anyway.
Well, that's why vaginoplasty exists, I guess.
Apparently.
This was not a scheduled topic.
It was not.
No, this
was
not. Katie segued into something unscheduled.
Katie wanted to talk about vaginas.
You're welcome. Internet, you're welcome.
This is why we kicked her off the show.
Okay. All right, so what's her other topic?
What was your actual topic, Katie, the non-vaginal one?
Oh,
I was wondering how that was going to segue into it.
Yeah, I thought it
was... Nope.
Because
nope.
I knew the topic we were supposed to get you. Like, this is going to be a weird segue. Vaginas, 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 vaginas. My notes aren't matching up.
Man, I wish my notes would have matched up. I would have studied some more before we came.
I'll explain the connection to the Neville.
All right, anyway, topic.
Thing, but
topic.
I mean,
topic.
I kind of want to know the connection between Neville Longbottom and weird-looking vaginas.
Well, no, exploding vaginas.
I mean, done with them.
Oh, it's because looking at a picture of Neville makes your vagina explode metaphorically.
No, but we'll go with it.
Okay,
sure.
I was thinking about on the way over, like one of the reasons I don't play anymore is you can't, in my opinion, be a casual player and get better at this game, just because it's changing so much all the time, and they're adding new things and new releases, and like you have to follow the podcast and see what the new lists are and like what happens and what people are thinking, and there's a lot of time commitment that goes into this game. Like, I don't think there is such a thing as a casual player who can be good.
There are a lot of games where you can put a little bit of time in and get better over time. This particular game, if you only put a little bit of time in, you get worse over time. Yeah. Probably.
No, I.
That's why Jim doesn't play competitive.
That's why Jim doesn't play anymore. It's why Jeff doesn't play anymore. It's why Jason says he doesn't want to play
anymore. Even if you don't get worse as a player skill wise, the metas shift, and so you'll fall behind the shifting.
Correct.
So, like, I'm really good at playing anti troop spam, and it's like the world has moved to armor skew.
No one cares.
And so you're just flat footed.
That by itself, and that even, and if it was true, is it a bad thing? If someone's casual and they want to go to a tournament and they don't care if they go 2-2 or, you know, they know they're going to lose round one to the good player and then have, you know, a couple rounds.
Well,
like,
but I think your mistake, because a casual player, in my mind, isn't necessarily somebody who wants to go to a tournament and lose and are okay with losing. There's somebody who just doesn't want to put the time and effort but enjoy the game and the model and the meta. Yeah. Like
Katie really enjoys the game. She really enjoys, especially the models in her army. But she stopped playing when she realized that every tournament she was going to, if anything, she was finishing worse and worse, not better and better. Because she didn't want to put... She wanted to go to a tournament and play hard and pay attention and focus, but she didn't want to spend 2 weeks preparing for one Saturday of tournament.
Here's the thing, and I think a definition of this is going to be required for this discussion, because it's kind of touching what Brian was bringing up, there is casual time input and hardcore time input, and then there's casual as in caring whether you win or lose, and then hardcore caring whether you win or lose. And so there's casual casuals who put zero time in, who put very little time into it, and also don't care if they win. And then there's the super hardcore people who put a lot of time into it, and they need to go 4-0 every tournament. The issue, and then I guess if there's people who put a lot of time in it and don't care if they win, I guess good for them. They just do a lot. The issue is people who put a casual amount of time into it but still care if they win.
Right.
Like, if you only play 2 games a month and you're okay losing both those games, there's not a problem. The problem is if you only play 1 or 2 games, you know, even a couple games a week, like you make down one night a week and you do it to your own thing, but you really, really care that when you go to a tournament, you go 1-3.
Well, yeah, I don't know. It gets frustrating after a while to, even if you win a game, you walk away and you're like, I made this mistake, this mistake, this mistake, and you never get any better. And, like, you're angry at yourself.
Well, although knowing you made those mistakes is a huge part of getting better.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you don't play often enough, you're not going
to remember.
You're not going
to
remember it. Or, like, if the scenario is a little bit different, you didn't get to apply your knowledge in, like, this way. And so, I mean, just playing the game over and over again and reading what other people are saying and what's going on and knowing the cards and what all the cards can do are, like, major advantages that people can have that a casual player, somebody who doesn't want to put a lot of time in the game, is not going to have.
Or even if someone who plays against you says, well, the rule changed this, and it's like, if you don't know enough, well, are they right? Are they wrong? I mean, if they say that, they sound confident. I mean, do I just believe them? Do I need to call a judge? All these kind of things. As a casual player, you don't know what to do, you know?
So, I don't know. But, I mean, that's my feeling, is I don't think, because the game is so expansive, I don't think that you could ever be somebody who wants to put in a week, you know, going down, putting in a game or two a week, and be competitive at the same time.
Right.
Like, you just can't do it. And you even see people who were at the top of the game, if they don't go to the store, you know, several times and go to tournaments every week, they start to fall down the rankings pretty quickly.
Yeah, but you can't go to batting practice 1 or 2 times a week and be a super good baseball player. I mean, anything you want to be really good at, you need to devote time to.
I think baseball's a bad example because it's a sport. I think a better comparison would be something like chess or Go. And maybe this already was said, but I firmly believe you could play chess one or two games. Say you played the equivalent of a tournament 2 weeks a month. So you played 4 games of chess on the first Saturday of every month and the third Saturday of every month. You would get better at chess.
Yeah.
Like, you just would.
The issue is chess isn't evolving.
Right. And that's Katie's point, is right. New models come out, meta shift, and that's what you can't keep up with without a heavy investment of time outside of playtime.
That's what I'm saying, is the daw of this is that if you care how well you do,
right,
you must devote the time. If you don't care, you can or you can't, it doesn't matter.
But it's not just time. You can't just devote time playing the game, is Katie's problem. Katie would have been willing to spend more time playing the game. She is unwilling to memorize every card that exists in the game and all the new ones that come out.
Well, and it's not every card. It's how each card is used and how you see it played on the game. And can you, think about how many podcasts you probably listen to each week where people are talking about it and they're staying focused and, like, this is some shifts that are coming up. These are the answers people have come up with.
Most of the good players I know listen to none of them.
It's not the listening to them, though, but those players, like, okay, let's take John, who you would think is the counterexample to this, right? Because he very rarely actually puts models on. Fat Asian,
Damaris.
Okay. John Damaris. He very rarely puts models on the table. However, he thinks about War Machine as much as anyone I know. Like, he sits around and chats for hours with Keith and with Chad and with other guys from the Des Moines area about War Machine, about the shifts in the meta, about what models counter other models, about the combination of Model A with Model B with Model C and how that's strong or weak against certain other pairings. Like, the fact that he hardly ever plays the game has actually very little impact on his ability. Like, he's still a good player, even when he doesn't put models on the table.
And that's time devotion.
It is time devotion.
How you devote the time can be devoted in different ways, but it's just time devotion.
But the problem is there's only one way that actually matters. Like, once you've got the fundamentals of the game down, what actually matters is that not playing the game time.
I don't think that's 100% true. You could argue about what is more efficient or more optimal, but I think if you devoted a lot of time just playing your stuff, even if you don't listen to podcasts, even if you don't have discussions about meta shift and interaction, stuff like that, if you get your stuff down to where you can play it in your sleep, you can adapt to stuff you've never seen before.
Yep.
You know, if somebody said...
That's not true. Do you know how many... When I played frequently, do you know how many times I lost simply because I didn't know what a model did?
Unless you're willing to sit down at the beginning of the game, read every single card front and back, every single word, because sometimes individual words matter hugely.
And the fact that, like, and sometimes you don't even understand what it means, like with your guy who can shift people backwards and frontwards and sideways and whatever, and you have to tell people, like, I can actually shift you sideways,
like Gordon,
and that's something to think about. Like, that's when you're reading the card, it might not occur to you how it actually interacts in actual gameplay. Like, I got killed by Gareth one time because I didn't realize he could travel, like, 20 inches.
Sure.
Like the pirate ball. Like, think about trying to take apart the pirate ball without already fundamentally understanding which solos you need to kill in which order. Like, you're not. Like, the pirate ball just defies the brute force approach.
But again, I think it depends how... I mean, maybe some stuff will be hidden in there, but in every game I've played, and most of the players that I play against, like, if you sat down against somebody with the pirate ball, if you sat down against me and you'd never seen the pirate ball, it would just be, while this guy's alive, they have tough, while this guy's alive, they have fearless, while this guy's alive, they have steady, blah.
And your point is exactly my point. The Madison meta... while a very competitive meta, is a very gentle meta in that regard. I always, when I sit down with Lilith 2, I sit down and I look, have you played against Lilith 2? No. You need cover, you need a hill, you want to get there as fast as possible, you want to have all your transfers, because I will shoot you dead otherwise.
Sure.
Here's how I will do it in general, but just trust me on this one, I will.
Whereas
you show up at a tournament at Adepticon, nope. Person sits down across from you like, what does that list do? Here's my cards.
I've never had that happen to my wife. In my life.
I've had it happen at Adepticon.
I
had it happen at Adepticon a couple years ago.
Some people, and I have seen this enough times. I've seen it a moderate amount of times where they have a gimmick.
Yep.
They don't want you to know the gimmick.
Because then they're afraid they won't win.
It's a gotcha.
It's a gotcha. And it's and I think that person will get someone that tournament, but they'll never win it because they don't understand. More people do what you say mass people do, is you sit down and you're like, okay, hey, you're playing Mach Karn, what's the threat range? I'll go 21 inches in this list or 18 inches in this list. And then you don't go over all the details. You say, okay, my max range is this. And then you move on. They kind of go. I do agree. I see the point, what you're saying. I do think you need to know your whole army fully. And you have to have some awareness of being able to glance and identify something.
I think there's a point of when you're learning the game, where you'll actually kind of have like a, your first small peek where you'll actually really understand everything that you do, and you'll have a vague understanding of other people's, and then you can adapt to that. If you don't, you don't have to pass that peak to play competitively.
And with Brian Sambo, the gotchas will get somebody, but they won't win because they only work against people who don't know the gotchas. So it is unfortunate if you're a new player who gets got by the gotcha. But the reason that the reason that meta is, as you called it, gentle meta, isn't to be gentle. The reason I tell my opponents those things is for my own benefit.
I'm going to beat you anyway.
No. Or the thing is, my gotcha is not going to work against a player that I give a shit about facing.
Right.
As in a player I'm going to face when it's a tournament level. Sure. If I win this, I get a trophy. Like, sure. Obviously, I care about everybody. Like, the big – this game matters. Yep. Those high-level games, I'm going to face players who aren't going to get caught off guard by the fact that, oh, what? Alexia 2 can put a guy in my back arc and charge to get her on Polaris Shield? Why, I never.
Yeah.
They're not going to get caught by that. So I explain to people I'm facing this so that I don't win that way, because if I win that way, I didn't get better.
But the other thing, and this is why I think Katie gets frustrated, and why I think a lot of people, when they hit that mid-level point, get frustrated, is people that play at a very high level are very good about it.
Yeah.
People that X and 2 every tournament they've ever been to
are assholes.
And do you know who you play against when you're a mid-level player who's like just trying to learn the game still? You play those guys. You play one game, and then you play three. If it's a four-round tournament, you play three games against those assholes. Like, maybe the last game of the day you're playing at someone who's as bad as you are, and then they can't even explain their gotchas because they don't even know what they are, and then they like sit down at the table and like, oh my gosh, I can totally do this.
It's like, oh, I gotcha. I didn't know I could do
this. I didn't know I could do
everyone
that.
Everyone surprises the stand, and then it's okay because everyone's like amazed.
Yeah. So, like, your first game is fine, usually, although a lot of people are extra dickish in the first game of a tournament, even good players. Then you play a total jerk the second round, then you play a total jerk the third round, and then you play somebody who's as clueless as you.
Well, it's not even people being jerks. Like, let's say that somebody does sit down and they go through their army and what they do. There is a little bit of information overload, especially as you're trying to get your models to do what they need to do, counter whatever your army is doing. Like, there's just a lot of thinking that needs to go into it. And my point, I guess, isn't that there can't be casual players. It's that you can't be casual at this game and be good at it.
There's a reason most people that don't think about the game outside of maybe on Wednesday nights in the occasional tournament don't ever travel to a tournament.
Oh, yeah.
It's just not. It's just too frustrating an experience.
And I can understand it. And I mean, even at my least, I'll sit down with the list and I'll be like, okay, my gimmick is I'm super fast, or my gimmick is this. And I won't explain it. Unless,
sure.
If they ask more questions, I'll like, sure, whatever. I'm like, okay, my gimmick is I'm going to charge 20 inches at some point. Or my gimmick is I'm immune to shooting.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Well, you know, if they ever release those models.
Yeah, but I mean.
They exist. It's just a matter of being honest with yourself. You know, it's...
It would be nice in a perfect world if you really could just slowly get better at the game by playing lots of games.
Or slowly care less about the fact that you're not getting better at the game.
See,
that
but is the I other think if you're solution. The kind of, if you're the kind of person who's going to get into a hobby like War Machine, unless you just have money, like you shit money in the bathroom, it's enough of a money expenditure, you're probably someone who cares about winning.
No.
Unless you're
zero
somebody
truth.
Who likes painting.
Unless you're a hobby. Unless you're a hobby.
You can just think that steampunk pigs look cool. You can just think that Russia with a chicken steam jack is neat. You can just like werewolves. You can just like playing the game.
As to attest the fact of people play 40K.
Yeah,
like that's a perfect example. People play 40K.
They play for the models.
Yep, they play for the models and for the people that they play with.
But there is a decent enough group. I mean, and I understand Kitty's thing. And also, Jim won't play tournaments. And when he stopped playing, he felt that the game was advancing at a level that he couldn't keep up with. And he's that thing where when he doesn't win, he can't lose and be happy. He has zero ability to lose. I mean, I'm not saying you have that, you're not quite in that same level, but if he loses the game, he's unhappy for the rest of the day. And he felt there were so many things in the game that he couldn't keep up, and it was frustrating him competitively. So that was one of his big drivers to not play competitively anymore.
Yeah, because even if you know what your stuff does, if you don't know, hey, I need an answer for these like eight things when I go into a tournament, or I'm just not going to win.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't know what those eight things happen to be at the moment, like, you, even if you know your army in and out, it's really hard to bring two lists that are going to do any useful stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you might avoid all those eight things. You never know. But you're putting a lot of your faith, you're in Luck's hands.
Yes.
And then if you don't know that, and suddenly, you know, Circle sits down to have some fun, and the other army just happens to be like the super hard counter, and you don't know that, you're like, you move forward, have some fun, and suddenly everything just falls apart in the next 90
minutes. And the
minutes.
Game
well,
is going towards
you build
more.
A Belthegor and Bile all like, oh, I'm going to have all magic attacks, and then you sit down against Cro-Mac with Druids.
Yeah, and you're like, And the thing is, this game, as the meta is currently advancing, is becoming very much lots and lots of things that are hard counters to certain things that you have to prepare for. Bradagus is an excellent example. Like, if you can't prepare for just shit tons of high armor with lots of shield guards, like, if that's a problem for you, you can't beat Bradagus. Like, you just can't. Like, if you don't have an answer for like 250 boxes of armor 18, you can't beat Vyros 2.
So and there are,
or Meat Mountain,
or Meat Mountain, or Fist of Halak, or
yeah. And people fit in all categories. So there are a group of people who play this game who are casual and are happy being casual, but who would like to win more, but they don't put the effort into it. And that's they're allowed to be in that meta and in that category, but it's one where they're not gonna, the game is going to make them happier.
The problem is,
should it though? I mean, that's another question.
My problem is, I feel like, so if you think of a player's journey through the War Machine, and I almost quit over this, there's like four distinct stages as a going from a new to a senior war player. We all admit that there's the new player who doesn't know anything, and they're adorable, and isn't it great? I love playing Old Witch with an army of nothing but jacks. That's adorable. You're cute. You're learning the game. Have fun. Good on you. Then there's the tier four player, which I would argue at least some of you guys at this table, I don't think I've reached it yet, but these are the people that win and take home major tournaments. You can win at you could win at Adepticon, kind of in any given Sunday approach. Like, you're a good enough player, you could take home a tournament on any given Saturday. Sure. Then the tier two player, and this is where Katie was, and this is where I almost quit War Machine, is this person that's like, I really want to get better. I really want to be a good player at this game. I'm not bringing these Joker clown lists anymore. Like, I'm trying to, like, figure out what about my army works and what's good and what works together. But every time I show up at a tournament, I get ass-raped because I don't know. Sorry, I apologize.
That was 2014.
Oh, okay, good. I get totally destroyed because every tournament it feels like it's my first time against Kane 2. Then it's my first game against Harbinger. Then it's my first game against Meat Mountain. Then it's my first game again. And it's just like, and it's you do that for a year.
There are a couple dozen lists your first game you lose against.
Well, and the thing that frustrated me was, like, I was starting to learn the other casters, and then a new book came out. And I was like...
Like, she was just starting to figure it out. And then she was just like...
for somebody new into the game... Trying to learn 148 casters or 149 casters is a pretty big undertaking.
And the thing is, there's probably only 80 you really need to learn, but you don't know which 80 that is, and it's still 80.
Yeah.
It's, and then somebody like Chuck shows up and annihilates you using Zarkova.
And you're like, oh.
Because he didn't bother to learn
because
her.
Because why did you learn? Yeah, why would you learn Zarkova? Because even if you ask people, they'll be like, no, don't worry about her.
Yeah. Like, my big issue is in your thing, I think I'm a solid tier 3 in your example player. And the issue I've struggled with for several years, and I keep saying that I'm going to pick a direction, I keep not picking a direction, is I can't decide to put in the 40 hours a week, hardcore this, that, and push myself to tier 4, or train myself to be okay with it and drop into tier 2.
Right.
And so I keep going one way and the other way, and then I'm like, well, this week, I'll just play pigs and lose, and I don't care. I'm just having fun. And then the next week, I try to really knuckle down and just kick ass with Lucan, and I whiff a waffle. And that's the danger.
But I argue, once you've reached tier 3, which is where I definitely sit, you'll never really be a tier 2 player, because you're not going to go to a tournament and be like, oh my god, Kane 2.
Right.
Didn't see that coming. Like, you're past that point in your War Machine career. Like, you there will be lists that every once in a while somebody like Chuck will just bust out Zarkova and you'd be like, bruh! And I just didn't see that coming. But like, you know Arcadius' Theme Force exists. You know about Kane 2. You know what a Hunter does. You know what Mollet Karn does.
But again, to rewind to like my very, very first point, I don't think you could name 3 things about Zarkova right now.
I could.
Okay, fine. Fuck you. But in general.
one of my best friends, and that I play against a lot, plays a crap ton of Kador and bitches about her a lot.
Not Zarkova. Who is another?
Pick a Trollcaster.
Okay. Fiona the Black.
Well, we played a lot of Mercs.
What does Venithrax can all do?
Yeah, Venithrax is good against Hordes. That's all I know.
Right. And so here's the thing. You know almost nothing about Venithrax. Mm-hmm. But you knowing as much as you know about your Rhett,
mm-hmm.
just knowing your army, if you sat down across Venithrax, I don't think it would take you more than 30 seconds of looking at its card to have a general idea of how you need to adapt to
but
play
the
against
but that. But he knows the rest of the army.
Who I know the rest of the army. I know what Crow's Cutthroats are.
He knows the rest of Crick's army.
I know how their chickens work. I know how Crow's Cutthroats work. I know how Bile Thralls work. Like, I don't need to learn any of that.
Tier 3 level that.
Because
works.
I'm a tier 3 level player.
I know, but my point is that you were completely saying, you were basically saying practice with your own army is useless if you don't do the research to learn the other armies.
To get from 2 to 3, yes. And I stand by that.
And, okay.
But then you, I think you have to know generally what each army does. You don't need to know what each caster does.
That unit's fast. That guy's got guns. Yeah. That guy's slow but good in melee.
You have to know. You have to have an outline of the factions in your head, but you don't need to know every spell list of every caster. Because once you know what Krix does in general. And then you face it, you sit down, you go, okay, but I don't know what, I haven't seen Venithrax, you look at his car, and you can adjust in your head, okay, tweak this, tweak that, and you're ready to go.
And I think at that point, you're tier 3. I think, as far as what you're saying, I think going from tier 1 to tier 2 is 100% play your army.
Yeah.
100% play your army, play 50 games, you've gone from tier 1 to tier 2, congratulations.
I would probably agree with that, too.
Tier 2 to tier 3 is 100%, you don't have to play.
Not 100, come on, dude, okay. Not a fucking
80%, 100%, even if you do. 80%.
We like extremes.
You could go.
What? Jeremy's extremist?
Like 80% of going from tier 2 to tier 3, you could get by going to tournaments and paying attention, watching other people's games, not even playing.
And that's fine. But my point is you don't. You can get there still devoting, I would say at most 60-40, not 80%. Because again, if you continue to knuckle down with your army, if you continue to practice, because what I'm saying is that's the kind of time that you can get in.
Right.
You don't have to give up on becoming tier 3 just because you don't have time to listen to podcasts. You don't have a group. You can sit down for an hour and discuss these things. You're saying if you can't do that, you're fucked.
No, it doesn't have to be podcasts.
You can do table time. You could be a monk living in a cave with no radio and no podcast. Come out, play 3 or 4 games a week, and you could still get there. Because if you learn your stuff enough, you know the general gist of rock versus paper versus scissor. And you're like, that's a shooty unit? Okay, I know what I do with my list against shooty. I might not know the specifics, like, it turns out Mage Hunter Strike Forcing their line of sight. Okay, I didn't realize that. But it's a shooty unit. And if I know how I handle shooty units, because I've studied my stuff well, I at least will have a shot against that. And I know that that unit is slow, but really high armor with lots of boxes. Okay, I know how I handle that.
I put up a
Bastions might surprise me. Oh, they can do this extra thing, but at least I know how to handle rock versus scissors and scissors versus paper. And you can do a lot of that just with your own playtime.
When I play my Scorn, if I see a bunch of guns, I put up, and sometimes I don't know what each of those units do. I just know those they have bullets. Those bullets are coming to my side of the table.
Kriya.
So I'm playing up a Kriya Animus.
Right.
Sure.
He didn't need to read every ability on the card.
And even that, there will be, inside of that, there will be a couple gotchas, but it'll be the exception, not the rule. There will be this, this bypasses all your Kriya stuff because gotcha. But I think if you know your army and you know, okay, this is an anti-gun, this is an anti-melee, this is anti-magic, you're going to be better off more than you're not. You will still get screwed occasionally, but that even top, I mean, it happens to everybody.
It's kind of going against what the normal Art of War is, where you know your enemy better than you.
Well, Sun Tzu, he said, you know thyself. Yeah. And that's my point, is you can adapt to anything if you know how you work.
Correct, yep. And that's sometimes a big issue with people like me, in a sense, where somebody had mentioned is like, you know, are you a tier 2 or tier 3? If you switch out armies a lot, you reset that
it's very
that
hard
clock.
To become tier 3 like you, switching armies a lot.
Yeah. Travis is one of the big faction jumpers, and I've talked like his whole meta tells him, Travis, stop it, just play Krix. And he's like, well, like, I got all these thief forces. Faction hopping.
Yeah, you reset that link there from 2 to 3.
I don't faction hop as much in this game, but in like RPGs and mm-hmm. stuff like that, like MMOs, I had 50 characters that were all level 8 because I was I'm done with being you. I'm going to try you out now. And that's not how you get good at being.
Yeah, because I mean, it is frustrating when you sit down in a tournament and if you happen to run into like 2 or 3 gotchas in a row. Your day is not going to... You're not going to remember that day finally. You're like, I sat down and this new thing happened and that Team Fortress was in the last no quarter and the new book thing got me there and it's like, you know, I didn't play for a month and suddenly everything...
Or an errata came out that completely changed how I thought something worked.
Yeah.
Which does happen.
And if it happens, if you get a big pile that in a row, it is very frustrating.
And I think you experience a year of that as a Tier 2 player. I was incredibly frustrated for about a year trying to break through that bubble. And it felt like every tournament I went to, I got beat by something that I just... Like you use the example of Strike Force, and that's an excellent example, because a lot of people don't see red as often. And I sit down, and I'm like, no, really, these guys shoot, and they're Pathfinder, and they're stealth, and they ignore your spells, and they ignore your focus, and they ignore line of sight. And they're like, okay, great, and they move forward, and I'm like, no, and I start shooting something that's behind them, and they're like, you can't do that. I was like, no, really, one of the 17 rules I listed for this unit is 100% I can do that right now.
Right.
Also, you're dead.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, but you are.
But there's other things, too. Like, if you know what to do against a shooty army, that's great,
but you also have to know which part of that shooty army is the most important to kill.
Threat assessment and...
And threat assessment is super hard to learn.
I would agree completely.
One of the biggest things about this game.
And that's one of the things you learn the best by watching someone who's good play your faction, is because they're like, I need to kill this, and then I kill this, and then I kill this. And if you watch the game carefully, you can learn what they prioritize to kill.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I learned a lot watching videos of JVM play War Machine for Legion. One of the problems I have with Rhett is I don't consider myself a fantastic Rhett player, but I also can't find anyone to watch that's better than me. I watch a Rhett video, and I'm like tearing my hair out.
You're like,
what the hell are you doing right now?
You're B+, and there's no A videos
There's no A videos to watch for my Rhett. And like Jim used to be very good with Rhett. And then when he came back and we played each other, like, it, part of why he quit, I think, is he was super frustrated about losing to me more than one time ever. Like, we played each other 3 times in a row. I beat him 3 times in a row, and the 3rd time was the tournament he quit. Like,
yeah, same thing with me. That was also the tournament
where Mavana 2 came out. And,
it was. And
a player that Jim considered a tier 2 player
beat him won a tournament with Mavana 2.
And so Jim was like, well, fuck this then.
Yeah. And
how
like,
dare someone lose in this event?
But like, it is.
I like Jim.
In the course of a 6-month period, Jim went from someone I could learn something from to somebody who didn't even like know as much as I did about Rhett versus the meta. And it's not like he wasn't playing. He was still coming out occasionally on Wednesdays, and like he just wasn't ever thinking about it outside of Wednesdays.
To be fair, everyone has a policy. If Jerry beats you 3 times in a row, it's probably time to
pack it up.
Man, whatever you're doing, like, yeah, I guess I'm out of that sport.
Unless it's disc golf.
Yeah, all right. We probably go somewhere. I think any final words? Anyone have anything they haven't got out? Because we should probably move on to recommendations.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
I understand and I think it's very hard for, I think we lose players because of it, but I also don't know a solution.
I think there is attrition because of it. I think it's one of those things, it's a hard truth, and I don't think there's a way around it in this game.
No.
I think
the players need to be honest with themselves when they come over here, and need to be honest with them when they come in. The appeal of War Machine over a lot of other games, specifically the entire GW line, is that War Machine is a very tightly made competitive game with actual skill to it.
Yes.
Versus, you know, roll a shit ton of dice, shout wog, and charge.
Yeah.
Which is fine if that's what you want. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people that come on board underestimate,
it's
a fucking difficult game. And so they get caught by surprise by this.
Yeah.
So a big part is being upfront about that.
And we do try, but that's why so many 150 points worth of armies wind up on eBay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would recommend to people that I think the other issue is no communication. New players, you come in and you get your ass handed to you, just be open about it. A lot of people will be more than happy to help walk you through that tier 1 to tier 2 and help you out as best as they can.
Well, I don't think the tier 1 to tier 2 is the hard jump.
Well, in some metas it is, and ours it's not. We're very good about taking you from 1 to 2. Even we haven't figured out how to help from 2 to 3.
Yeah, it's
because I don't know that you can.
It's just experience is really the hardest thing to put in, and we can help out, point you in the right direction, but yeah.
I mean, you can if you. I said it half the fucking episodes, but it doesn't matter. But Rick's thing, whether you win or lose, if you know why, it was a successful game. You learn something. And if you lose a game because of every gotcha in the game, but you only lose to each gotcha once, then after 100 games. You got it. Yes. You know, so you can brute force your way through.
And then every book is maybe like 3 more gotchas and you're back to
it. Watch Andy play Uncharted sometime. You can brute force your way through anything if you try hard enough and don't know which.
I died.
Yeah, I win. He'll do that all the way through that goddamn game. It's brilliant.
Your opponents will run out of bullets and Andy will still be running at you.
I brute forced my way through the Axiom boss.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. But you know what? It works, you know. It's just a matter of the investment. And that's what it boils down to. Again, it's time. You know,
it's a lot.
But just don't get frustrated. Either don't get frustrated or get frustrated. Give up on your dreams and settle for being.
Settle
for being tier 2.
Words from Nathan.
Hey,
give up on your dreams.
Many of you have dreams that are unrealistic, and you should really fucking stop because your
life is healthier.
You're ruining yourself by your dreams. You sure
most
you want
of us on this podcast have lowered our expectations every year we've been alive.
Yes.
We've been around several years.
Yeah. Give up now. You're really wasting your time.
There's a point where dreams become delusions, and you should give up on them for your own health.
Yeah.
If you're never going to make it to tier 3, be happy you're at tier 2.
Yeah.
And if you can't do either, I'm sorry, you're fucked.
Yep, sell your models. You're going to be unhappy.
Yeah.
Don't sell them to me.
All right, recommendations.
I'll start. It is that time of year again. I recommend going and playing disc golf.
Yeah, thanks for the invite that I didn't get yesterday when you guys went and played disc golf.
Hey, you're welcome.
Yeah. You were working at 6 in the morning.
It was also 6:30 in the morning.
So, yeah, that's... Jeremy threw up.
He did.
What?
So the night before, I still swear it was at least partly food poisoning. But
you don't remember part of the night.
But I don't remember part of the night, so it's at least partly booze. I woke up the next morning. I felt fine. I felt fine. No hangover, no headache. Had a glass of water. Was like, that hit my tummy in a little bit of a weird way, but whatever. Grabbed an apple. We drove literally from my house to Elver Park. And as we were pulling into the parking lot, I said, Katie, hold my apple. And she's like, what? And I pulled into the parking lot. I stopped in the first spot. I opened the door, and I threw up everywhere. Three times I projectile vomited out of the car. And then I was like, all right, I'm good to go. So we pulled into the parking spot, went and played, proceeded to play 2 rounds of disc golf. I felt fine.
Round and a half.
I went to get breakfast and almost threw up again when I put the first bite of omelet from Pancake Cafe in my mouth and had to go like sit outside. And then proceeded to go home, sleep for like 5.5 hours, wake up, almost threw up again when I drank a drink of water.
That was booze.
It was at least partly
it was booze,
but like with
sunlight.
No headache and no anything else, like it was the weird
good
it,
booze.
Yeah, apparently, it was the weirdest hangover. My recommendation is don't do that. It was terrible.
Oh wait, no, my recommendation is get your coworkers hammered.
We did get Katie's coworkers pretty hammered. Well, it was one of the gals' last day work, and so we were celebrating.
Is it another person whose job you're going to have to do?
Yep, actually, yes.
Oh,
they have her replacement, but he got one solid week of training, so you have no idea what he's doing.
Yep.
All right, and your recommendation?
I guess we're just skipping every other.
No, okay, it was Katie and then me and then you.
Oh, what
my recommendation was don't get so shit faced that you throw up at the thought of water. It's terrible.
I can skip you if you're still thinking.
Also, play Clash.
I'm going to recommend Shovel Knight.
Okay.
Shovel Knight is another one of our 8-bit style adventure games. You are a knight, and you have a shovel.
I figured.
And there you go.
just a hack.
It's a side-scrolly...
Side-scrolly action adventure game. Kind of similar, looks like of Ghosts and Goblins. Okay. I don't think it's as difficult as Ghosts and Goblins, but... Yeah.
You can destroy save points for extra treasure. That's
correct.
Neat.
Yep.
It's like, fuck it, I don't need to save.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah, checkpoints. Yep, more treasure. You die, you turn into like bags of treasure that you have to go back and get.
Collect.
which is horrible when you fall down a pit.
Because the bags of treasure are
right above the pit.
Nice.
You're like, oh, do I want to repeat
this?
Are they
at least high enough that you can jump and nick them with your feet?
Oh.
Well,
no.
If it was EverQuest, it would be at the bottom of the pit and you'd be like, fuck you.
EverQuest, oh my god.
If you throw enough of yourself down there, you'll fill up the pit. Like the cleric
money bags.
But then when you go to collect them, won't they go away and so you'll just be at the bottom of the pit again?
Yeah.
Listen.
Listen,
I can't
you.
Have all the solutions. I'm just an idea man.
Yeah. Okay.
I recommend an app game. I know it's on the Apple Store, so you can get it on your iPads. It's also on Android. Did you download it? Did you try it? It's fun. It's free, which is great. It's called Does Not Commute.
Okay.
I will just up front tell you, it's free.
You're going to pay them $2.
But you're going to pay them $2 because if you don't pay them $2, you have to start the game over every time you play it. The save system costs $2.
Okay, yeah.
But what it is it's a driving game. It's like a top-down view, and it's like you know, they have a car, and they're like, get this person to this exit. You just drive, and you get there.
True.
Great. Each stage has 15 of those. By the way, also, they have like character like summaries that are fucking hilarious.
Okay.
But there's 15 cars in each stage, and when you do car two, they're like, get this guy from here to here. And while you're doing that, it replays car one.
Oh, my gosh.
By the time you get to car 14, you're going to these intersections, and there's 13 other cars barreling every direction through the same intersection. You're like, who are these assholes? And they're all
it's you.
You have no one to blame but yourself because you took that shortcut the wrong direction down a one-way street, and now you need to go the other direction, and you're ramming into school buses, and everything's bursting into flames, and it's awesome.
That's kind of cool. I have to admit.
It's funny as hell because, like I said, one of my favorite examples of the humor is in the first level, there's one like such this and this other guy, and then like mail lady Susan finishes her route early so she has time to visit her good friend Mr. Smith. And then, like, two more cards, whatever. And then there's Mrs. Smith is returning home early. She forgot her pass key. What a goofy head. And then the next car is an ambulance is on its way to the Smith's house. There's been a terrible accident.
Nice.
I should, I'll load up the trailer if you guys got, like, a minute after this.
Yeah, it's free. It's $2 if you want to save. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to, you know, I didn't officially recommend this, so I'm going to cheese out. Mortal Kombat X, get it, play it in the PS4. I want to beat you up on it.
Major Tusk, Carnage for you, the number four, the letter U.
B-Geezy, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry, B-Geezy, B-G-I-E-S-E, yep. Major Tusk, and Rydia Fan.
Find us on the PS4 network.
I don't have it yet. I don't actually, I really well, don't like
on the PS4 network, because those
yeah, I'm on there too. Valiant 418, I'm on there too. Valiant
418 on the network.
I'm actually winning games online in Mortal Kombat. I've played, that's how much Mortal Kombat I've played in the last 2 years.
I'm actually playing a little too much.
Not all of them, but a couple. I'm actually winning a couple online games.
You have a blister
games.
On your thumb?
I have a blister on my thumb already.
Got numb thumb.
I just
I'm not a big fighting game guy, but I'm tempted, but.
It's, I mean, yeah, if you like the previous Mortal Kombat, you probably would like this, but. It's a fighting game.
There's a first-person adventure inside of it. That's
Which
how you
is not
unlock
very good,
it.
I've heard.
Oh, fuck that thing.
I have fun with it.
Fuck that thing. Goddamn spiders popping out everywhere.
Quick time events.
Oh, my God. Yeah. No, I don't like those.
There's only one place I can't get into because I haven't found the item that unlocks the door, but I'll figure it out.
The spider cave has most of it.
You could just pay $20 and just unlock all of it.
Yeah. Fuck that noise.
Yeah.
It's going to take I mean, I haven't played it for 3 weeks, and I still probably have weeks of play to unlock everything in that crypt. Oh, the crypt unlocks like a... Basically, all the finish you can do a finisher if you look it up online, but it unlock and it gives you how to do it
and tell you how to do it. Yeah,
and you can't do battalions until you unlock them unless you do something special.
There's always, it also has like concept art and shit
concept
like that
art and music
little
and alternate costumes,
cutie icons.
Well, which are important for your combat card because they all have different effects. It's a great game. I really love Mortal Kombat. If you like Mortal Kombat, you need to get Mortal Kombat X.
It's been fighting it.
Fair enough.
All right then.
All right, that's our recommendations.
Great. Thanks for listening.
Also, announcement, the Shays were on this episode.
Yeah, also, we're on this episode today.
I took a nap, so I didn't go to work.
I enjoyed us all being this chemistry.
It was fun being back.
Crew.
The gang's back together.
It was easy to convince her to come because she didn't work today.
Now we'll do every episode together again forever.
If she doesn't work.
You do my work for me.
Somebody,
I'll be here.
Somebody had mentioned that, Katie, that you look very bored without your Candy Crush.
Oh, it's right here.
But you were just...
But you were actually paying attention to the podcast.
Yeah.
It was different.
It was a topic that she thought of that had...
It was, to be fair, there were two topics she thought of.
That's her vaginas.
Vaginas and also...
And the topic like affected her. I mean, it's why she stopped playing.
It's why she stopped playing.
I mean, it's a pretty relevant topic that affected her, you know.
Yeah.
Also, you don't know my bored-faced person online.
It was Tort.
It was who?
Tort.
Who's Tort?
What are those?
Oh,
things?
That's how long you've been
know
going
Tort.
Tort.
He's at, you know, his face right now is tears.
Yeah, he's crying. He has a sad.
All right, we're going to call it quits.
Thanks, folks.
Bye-bye.
Go watch Game of Thrones.